All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Saturday, July 4th, 2015. Looking forward to a great show this morning. We're going to be talking with Minnesotan Ben Polan, who just battled it out with Matt Dobbins in the 2015 PGA Professional National Championship and played at a historic site, Philadelphia Cricket Club, a Tillinghast gem restored by Keith Foster. So we're going to be talking with Ben about that and a lot more. And he's on the line, so I'm going to burn through my first break so we can get right to Ben Polan. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabile has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
Back to On Par. I'm your host, Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined on the line by Ben Polan, assistant professional at Deepdale. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. Beautiful weekend ahead of us. 4th of July. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah, happy 4th of July to you as well. Thanks.
Let's start with how does a guy from Minnesota get to end up working at one of the most historic clubs on Long Island, at Deepdale?
A string of things. I went to school in Campbell University in North Carolina and did a golf management program down there. As a part of that, you do some internships during your years there, and one of my internships, my buddy Wes Roberts asked me to come out and work at Savonic with him.
Okay.
And that was kind of my ticket into the Mets section. I was out there in 2010, and that was the same year that Kirk Satterfield, another pro that used to work at Deepdale, was the first assistant there.
Uh-huh.
And while I was out there, he just said, "What are you doing for your next internship?" I said, "I didn't know." And yeah, he left the room. He came back and he said, "I was working at Deepdale." I guess he just called Daryl and told me that I was going to be working there next year. That was it.
That's unbelievable. That's an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
How much did that cost you? Did you have to buy him a couple beers? Did you have to, you know?
No. No, I played with him. He knew that I liked to play, and that I was willing to work at it. And I guess he thought that was something that Daryl would like it, or as one of his assistants to do. I know that's something that Daryl really promotes to all of us, but it really worked out.
Yeah, that's tremendous. What everybody I've talked to and I met you actually when I was there briefly, and he's such a well-grounded kid and such a humble kid. One, what does that say about your parents? And two, how much appreciation do you have for the Met section now that you've been in it for a little while?
What was the first question about my parents? Sorry.
I was just saying, you know, you everybody I talked to and having met you briefly, you know, you seem like such a well-grounded kid and you're such a well-adjusted kid. And so I'm just saying, how does that speak to how, you know, your relationship with your parents? And then secondly, being so humble, how much do you appreciate being in a section like the Met section, which is such a renowned section in the country?
Yeah, thank you, first of all. My parents, they just raised me, right?
Yeah.
I growing up in Minnesota, everybody's pretty laid back there, but grew up in a Christian home and taught me my values and learned some discipline growing up, and it kind of just carried through my whole extended family as well. We're all really close.
Right.
We all had similar values, and I guess it's kind of how I'm just stuck to them as I've progressed But as far as working in the Mets section, you have to be humbled if you end up here.
Right.
The best section in the country, I think.
Oh, well, that, without
golf courses.
Yep, great, go ahead, I'm sorry.
A lot of golf courses, a lot of great players, great professionals, the memberships at all these clubs. It's really special to be up here.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It's part of the reason why I started doing the show. It's just something that I just wanted to be able to tell the story of Long Island golf and to have, you know, people like yourself on as sort of vehicles to tell that story. So it's a tremendous area for golf, as anybody who loves golf knows. Let's talk about the PGA National Championship, but let's start with the golf course itself in Philadelphia Cricket Club, and talk a little bit about, it's obviously undergone a tremendous amount of work done by Keith Foster. What did you think of the golf course? What kinds of questions did the golf course ask you? What kind of strategy did you kind of want to employ? You know, talk a little bit about that.
Well, we played two courses.
Right.
There was the Militia Hill course in Wissahickon, Wissahickon being the championship course that
right.
just recently underwent that big renovation. The Militia Hill course was what I played on the first day. That one, they said, was a little older. The greens were a little more mature than Wissahickon, so
right
off the bat, you know that those greens are going to receive a little more, and especially after all the rain that we got. But
sure,
everybody knew that was the course that you had to score on. Like, you kind of had to go low on Militia Hill, then tried to grind it out on Wissahickon the next.
Yeah, it's kind of like when the pros go to Torrey Pines, right? They always want to try and attack the North course because they know South's going to be brutal, that kind of situation.
Yeah. But when I played the practice round with Daryl over at Wissahickon, it was cool just to see how he attacked the golf course as far as strategy goes. We were kind of lucky. We had a local caddy that was caddying for another guy that we played with that was giving us some tips. He was really helpful. But it was much narrower because we were much more firm. The course is faster overall, so you kind of knew that you couldn't really curve the ball that much off the fairway. You could run through the fairway, run off the sides. The fringe was probably only a foot wide, so it was either fairway or rough.
Wow.
The first cut.
You're right,
Cut. There was no fringe on the golf course. It was straight into the rough. The greens were cut straight into the rough, which is kind of a cool look. But, that course, I think it was a ball striker's course. The guys that saw the most, the correct distance the most, probably were the guys that finished towards the top.
How much did you rely on? I know you watched Daryl play and sort of, but how much probing did you do in talking with him and sort of getting, I'm assuming this might have been one of your biggest tournaments that you've played in to date. So how much did you rely on his mentorship?
A lot. He's won everything up here and a lot more elsewhere. I've told a lot of people that of all the things that I've been learning from him, I think what's been most valuable is how to win. He knows how to win, and he knows the mentality that you need and the preparation that you need, the kind of game that you need, swing that you need, everything. He'll mm-hmm. be able to tell you. But watching him just talk about how to walk into the last couple holes of a tournament, or how to play conservatively, aggressive, but just the timing of all that. It's like a big puzzle you have to put together in order to come out on top, to do it right.
Yeah, and really you almost did. I mean, it was a difficult coming down the stretch, and obviously didn't work out the way you wanted to. But did you expect this from your game in general? Before we get to that last round, I'm just wondering, did you have a sense that this was coming, or did you just get hot at the right time? What kind of how did you feel coming into the week?
I felt better than I did the week prior. I was working on my game a little bit with Jeff and Eric here at Deep Dell, and I started hitting the ball a little better, so I felt good swing-wise going into the event, and putting usually feels good in tournaments. And when I got to the course, and I saw that, you know, under par was going to be difficult, but I thought it was pretty possible for my game. And I really didn't know what to expect from the other competitors in the field, and some other guys, you know, they're a lot of good golfers, you know, the cut being around even or maybe one under. And he had only two guys finishing under par for the whole tournament. So
right.
I knew that I could shoot under par. I just didn't know how far under par would be good enough to win.
It was coming down the stretch there. It was like a little Met section shootout. That kind of had a fun little feel to it. I mean, I know you're in the heat of the battle, but it kind of, when you look at the leaderboard, it's kind of a nice reminder of what section you're working in, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You're playing against, you know, the best golfers in the country if you're playing in these, you know, state opens, Met opens, the Met PGA, the Long Island PGA, Westchester PGA.
Yeah.
All these guys are class golfers. I remember Mark Brown took a picture of one of the leaderboards, I think on the third day, maybe the second day. It was Dobbins, LeBritz, Daphne, and four other guys all up there for the Met section.
Exactly. And one of the things I've thought was interesting, and I'm not sure if it was last year's PGA or when Matt had won the first year, something like, you know, 20% of the guys that made it on to the PGA National to the PGA Championship, the final major, were guys from the Met section. So just tremendous section, tremendous talent. How much do you rely on not just a guy from the guys from Deepdale, but how much information do you share with guys in the section? How close is the section itself?
I think it's very, very close. You know, at the appropriate times. I mean, obviously, a lot of guys are really busy during the season. Much more clubs are probably a lot busier than Deepdale. But after the final round, a lot of guys have reached out to me and asked, you know, do you want to go out and grab dinner and talk about, you know, what you want to do and stuff like that. So they're all very willing to share their knowledge, their resources, and help each other.
What kind of, just getting back to your golf, just curious, what kind of golfer are you? I know you spent some time at Pete's Golf Shop, and I'm just wondering, are you a tinkerer with your golf clubs, or are you kind of like a field player, do you really pay attention to your sticks and kind of, you know, some people can be a little obsessive about it, but where do you fall in that scale?
I value knowledge. I think knowledge is power.
Right.
Some good golfers, and rightly so, just because it works for them, they kind of stay away from everything.
Right.
Because they're kind of afraid that moving anything around will change what they're doing.
Right.
I like to know what I'm doing. I like having the self, you know, efficacy of what's actually going on in my golf bag, in my golf swing, and being able to know for sure that this is where I want it and it's going to perform the way I want it to. So, yeah, when it comes to, like, Pete's Golf Shop, I love going in there and talking to guys like Kirk and Ono and Sonny and those guys, just hearing what they have to say about golf equipment. And they're pretty far beyond a lot of other people that I've talked to.
Yeah, I would say they are golf fitters in the region. They're the Met section of golf fitters. I mean, they really do stand out. They're knowledgeable, but like yourself and a lot of people in the Met section, they're quality people first. So Woody comes in and does the show a lot with me, and they're really good. They're really good people.
Yeah, Woody's really good. He fit me for a driver shaft 5 years ago. Dobbins brought me in there when I was, it was my first year at Deepdale, 3 or 4 years ago, but he brought me in there, I hooked me up, and I've been using the same shaft ever since. I've never switched it.
That's it, one and done.
Yep.
Excellent. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll talk more with Ben Poland. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
La Marmite Restaurant is a Long Island landmark. The tradition remains, but the menu, music, and vibe are all new. Golfers enjoy our wine selections from the vineyards of Ernie Els, Luke Donald, Jack Nicklaus, and Jim Nance, along with music on Friday and Saturday nights. Visit our website at lamarmeaterestaurant.com for more details. Choose La Marmite for your next night out. We'll make it a special one.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. We're talking with Ben Poland, Deep Dell assistant. Ben, all right, we're into the tournament now. What would you say prior to, as the tournament progressed, sort of, you know, what was it like to emotionally and as you sort of got yourself in contention before even the last round, what were the first 3 days like?
First 2 days were fun. I had my family with me the whole time, and the first day, much of the hill, I played pretty well. Had, was playing solid, then made an eagle on the 12th hole for me, the third hole, the par 5, and felt like, okay, this could probably be a pretty good round. It was pretty strong, and 4-under, and I was tied for the lead after that day, and then second day going out to Luke, my brother that was caddying for me, we just stuck to our game plan and executed it very well. I didn't hit the ball very well, but kept it out of trouble and made putts when I hit my good shots in there for birdies and got a 67, and that gave me that big lead. And then after that day, played with Grant Sturgeon on the third day. I was having that lead. I've been in that position before, playing with Grant, you know, being towards the top of the leaderboard, and I know he can put the heat on you. We played together in the National Assistance last fall down at the Wanamaker course at PGA Village, and he shot a 65 in the last group to Brian Norman and myself. I know he was a guy that's always going to hang around, and Dobbins as well, who was under par at that time. It was a different situation for me in a tournament of that scale,
mm-hmm.
having a lead. I didn't really know how to handle it. I didn't know how much to stick to my game plan or how much to play defense in certain situations, that sort of thing. But that was definitely a cool learning experience for me.
Were you fighting a little bit? I watched a little bit I watched all the rounds, but on the third round, I thought particularly it looked like you were down the stretch. You were just fighting your swing a little bit. Was that right, or did I see that right?
No, absolutely. Yeah, I had no idea what was going on. I had some idea. I just didn't know what to fix it, or even if I wanted to. Like, I was fighting between just trying to hit like a 40-yard hook down the fairway, which is typically my miss. I just swing way out to the right, or just try and bunt some shots out there. So you can't really fight your swing on those last two holes at that golf course. There's just they demand too much of you. You can't fake it on this golf course, is what we said all week. And that third round was kind of brutal.
Yeah, but you sort of, you know, got it together for the final round. I mean, obviously you're down there down the stretch. So was it just one of those things where it's just a new day? Because some people think that, you know, I think a lot of golfers, particularly amateurs, maybe not as much elite people like yourself, but a lot of golfers in general overcorrect and they overcompensate. And so, you know, they may fight it one day and then and maybe they don't play for another week or so. But when the next time they're out there, they just go totally the other way.
Yeah, well, it kind of goes to that situation. Mm-hmm. It goes back to, or how I handle it goes back to my knowledge is power sort of thing. Like that night I called, or Jeff called me, and he talked a little bit about what he saw, and just kind of what I saw, and he just gave me a couple of things on what to feel when I warmed up the next day. And another friend, worked with TJ Eaton and Matt Knoll out of Huntington,
mm-hmm.
Talked to him as well, just guys that I usually talk to about my golf swing. And I went down to the range about 2.5-3 hours early before the round the next day. And I'm one of those guys that's not really afraid to take video. So I've seen it probably every day.
Right.
I have a pretty good frame of reference of, you know, where it is when I'm into good and where it is when I have a certain miss or a certain tendency. And it's kind of cool to see how or which of those tendencies came out under pressure.
Right.
Definitely highlighted. So I went down, got some video, and it took about 5 minutes to see what I wanted to do, and made a couple more swings, got to where I wanted to, and I probably hit the ball the best that day, especially off the tee.
Right.
Definitely a couple of misses here and there, but
sure.
but I hit the ball pretty good the last day.
When you're looking at the video, does that is the most important? That is translating that into some sort of feel. I mean, you know, if you're not talking to people, obviously, you know, you're not calling people. You're not on the phone at the range right before your next, you know, the final round, and you're taking. You have these little snapshots of where you want to be. Is that translate into a certain feel? Does that give you confirmation of what you are feeling?
Yes, yes, that's what it is. It's identifying a certain component that's producing a certain ball flight or a certain error, an inconsistency. And that feel for me was a swing kind of getting a little long and feeling really inside in my takeaway, like inside and up. And that's what I felt.
Right.
And when you're in the situation like that and you try to feel the opposite, a little more outside, it feels so foreign that you can't really trust it. But when I do that, I try to do the takeaway that feels a little more outside and away from me, and it's actually right on line.
Right.
Gives me that little extra, you know, reason to do it with some confidence.
Just as a little side note, how I find it amazing when you look at amateurs and when they go come for lessons, how divorced their perception of what they feel is versus what they're actually doing.
Yeah. The golf swing is pretty crazy like that. It's,
isn't it?
You can tell someone to like move one component an inch and it feels like a mile to them.
Exactly.
Like you tell them to make one change and give them a lesson, make a video, and swing doesn't look any different than before, but they feel like they did something completely different.
Yep. Yep. I remember when I first started, I had like a sort of on a shorter backswing, and I was working at the time with Mike Hebron, and he would be like, just try to overswing, just to see if I could get to parallel. Forget about, you know, because my swing was more like a three-quarter at the when I first, in the beginning. And so it's just amazing. And then I think there's the one thing about golf that I find amazing is that you really do have to let it go a little bit to be able to do that. You have to really relax and trust. Because I remember when I used to then overswing, it just felt like I was letting it all, like, it was almost scary to the point where, like, oh, what do I do at this point? Because you're not used to being in certain positions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something, as an instructor, and I don't teach that much at deep detail, but kind of as an exercise at school and just for fun sometimes, we would we'd try to teach each other how to hit golf balls left-handed.
Right.
You kind of think, like, okay, this is what, you know, a student or maybe an early beginner kind of feels like. And like if you try to pick up a golf club left-handed, I know the coordination probably isn't there, but it's almost like starting from square one.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to try to figure out how to communicate with the student to get the right message across to get the right results.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take one more break. We'll be back in 30 seconds. More with Ben Polen. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
It's here at last. Golf season. South Shore Golf specializes in golf club repair, regripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf, 631-563-2025, 631-563-2025, or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, talking with Deepdale assistant Ben Polen. Ben, we've arrived at the final round, and we're coming down the stretch, and those the last hole really particularly. Take us through that a little bit, and how much was it, well, how difficult, I should say, was it to maintain your little bubble, if you will, your little golf bubble, being on national television?
Yeah, it's tough. It's very, very difficult to do. I mean, it's the first time I've ever really played golf in front of TV cameras. I'm just trying to find a comfort level with all of that. And my brother Luke, obviously, he's not being very comfortable in that situation either.
Right, exactly.
None of us have been there before.
Sure.
But, I kind of, talking to the guys back here, one of the assistants, Dylan, I guess, as Daryl, while they were watching, where I would feel it. Start to feel that, you know, I had the lead, I had to close it out. And Daryl said 15, and he was exactly right. That's kind of where I got to the point after Matt made a couple up and downs. I missed the putts and a little bad break in a bunker. Made two bogeys, and then there's two shots that at Dobbins is a little closer with. So I felt it a little bit, and then got to 18 with that two-shot lead, and I hit the same club, the three-wood, that I had all week, and probably the worst three-wood I hit the whole tournament. It was way off the heel. Didn't hit it solid. Just cutting back a little bit. I don't know how far it was or landed into the bunker, but it looked like it kind of skated up on the lip. I didn't see it finish. I was kind of just walking away in disgust with it.
Right.
And my brother said it looked like it got on top. And as soon as I heard that, I'm like, okay, I can hit the green. From there, or I can get it over the creek. I played with Charles Frost the third day. He was in that bunker in the lip of the bunker, and he decided to lay up because he didn't have a shot.
Right.
So that's immediately what I thought of. We walked down there, and I made the mistake of already committing to try to hit it over. We got there, and then I didn't even think about laying up because, to be honest, I really thought I could hit that shot. It wasn't that hard. I just had to hit the club on the ball, which is what I didn't end up doing right off the toe.
When you look back at it, I know, you know, sometimes we as golfers we can talk ourselves into a shot. And like you said, you had already had a preconceived notion of what you were going to do. How much did that, when you looked at that, if you think about it now and you think about that lie, obviously hindsight's 20/20. That's not my point. My point is that did you already convince yourself into that? To that, looking at that lie, did that already cloud your judgment? Because I know sometimes when I want to go for it, I've already really, it doesn't really, you know, you look at a lie and you're like, oh, I can hit that, you know, and you're not talking about realistic, you're talking about what you want to do, not necessarily what you can do.
Yeah, and that's what I think I can do and probably what I should do.
Right.
It was hanging back there somewhere in my head just because I was talking to another guy that was watching it TV, and he said that was kind of the only shot that it looked like I was asking Luke for some more information. Like
right.
I wanted him to say, yeah, just hit the shot, it's good.
Right.
And I kept asking questions to try and confirm that because probably somewhere in my head I was thinking, just lay up. But I thought I could hit the shot, and I don't regret anything. I could have easily hit it over. I just didn't execute it.
Right. Oh, yeah, no.
And Matt hit a great shot in there. I mean, he played that hole exactly how you're supposed to play. Like, I don't know if you guys could see on TV, but that pin was in a really difficult spot, really small shelf. He probably only has a 10 or 15 feet to land that ball, and he hit the perfect shot in there.
Yeah, the TV, I thought that the cricket club presented beautifully. It was a little challenging. You could tell that it wasn't... you just couldn't see how dramatic it was, that shot. I knew it was a good shot, but only people that are there can really have an appreciation for that little saucer that he was going for. And you're right, he did. He executed down the stretch, and it was a great championship all around. In the end, how proud are you of yourself?
Very. My goal was, as soon as I won the qualifier last year, I was like, I want to play in the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits. It's close to home. Could have a lot of friends and family come out to watch, and this is an awesome golf course, and never played in a major before. It's obviously my goal to play, and it's cool to get there kind of on a road less traveled to play in your first tour event or your first major. It's a big deal for me, so that was really cool. And then also the PGA Cup team in December out in Coeur d'Alene,
right, in
San Martin, California. So it's like a Ryder Cup tournament against PGA of America versus overseas.
Right. Well, you should be proud of yourself because I think that you have a lot to be proud of, and your parents have a lot to be proud of. I think you're a class act, and thank you for doing the show this weekend, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
No, my pleasure. All right, that was the Deepdale assistant, Ben Polin. Thank you for joining us. We're just about out of time. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Have a great weekend, folks.